I was at a diabetic benefit for, and I met her. She said, "Hey, you're doing a show. I'd like to come on sometime." And it was really nice of her to volunteer. And we had just gotten started. I thought, you know what? Let's get, you know, professional and get the gears popped in the fourth gear. I already, you know, ruined it and mangled it in the first 30 seconds. But that's okay. We'll get back on track.
Okay. We'll jump into some diabetic news.
Diabetic news right now.
Again. Apparently, a new study showing from Norway, diabetes linked with a lower risk of migraines.
Hmm, okay.
Well, usually when we talk diabetics, it's always, and there's an increased risk of, and,
sure,
you know, a litany of bad things. But in this case, if you have diabetes, migraines, you're 25% less.
Oh, okay. It's like, hey, you got a tapeworm, but you know what? You're losing weight.
See, you're looking at me like that. Like, okay, well, migraines is, I don't know. You get those, Dobie?
I do not. Only when I listen to the show.
See? See? Right away. It's a study carried out by Norwegian researchers. Actually, there's a Norwegian prescription database that they put together country.
Sure.
Yeah. So they had 10 years of information with people with type 1 and type 2 for migraine. 92% of the people with the diabetes were type 2, 8% with type 1, a little heavier in the type 1 than average. But still, the incidence of migraine, 26% lower with people with diabetes. So with the exception of the heart attacks and the strokes and the blindness and the amputations, good news.
Your head is clear. You have no migraines. I was just curious. You're the one that fishes all the news stories out every week. Mm. What made you pick that one for the lead? The breaking news, this just in.
Well, when you hear the second story,
okay.
Well, then you'll see why.
Let it rip.
Obese people of type 1 and 2, mm-hmm, trying to lose weight may struggle with their fat tissue, and not just because they're diabetics, apparently, but there's something with fat tissue being damaged or scarred in excess, being a type 1 or type 2, mm-hmm, opposed to the regular fat people out there who are on their way to being a type 2. Here's the situation. University of Exeter, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
I have a degree, a doctorate from that school.
They studied a range of fat deposits,
mm-hmm,
discovering fat tissue becomes damaged in diabetic overweight people because the cells become, their wording now, suffocated by growth.
Mm-hmm.
This is gold, Dobie. I'm throwing it at you. Feel free to pick up some of the dust.
Buddy, you know, I'm trying to prop you up, buddy. I don't know what else to do.
The process affects the tissue, making it inflamed. In essence, it spills into the blood, affects the organs. So here's the thing. The findings suggest losing weight can be more challenging for obese diabetic people.
Losing weight is a challenge, period. That's why we're here on the show, because I think people, they work hard and they exercise and they do a lot of work and they look and say, wait, I gained a pound. How did that work?
The findings suggest losing weight can be more challenging, mm-hmm, for these obese people. Researchers stated it's still wholly possible and recommended to lose the weight. It's just that because the actual fat cells themselves are scarred or damaged, it's going to be harder.
I'm with you.
Apparently, it will make losing weight more difficult. Does not mean the scarring makes weight loss impossible. It's just apparently it's those fat tissues are becoming overworked. And when they're overworked, they're cranky. They spill bad things into the blood. And then once you lose, I mean, look at the people that you know have lost weight, right?
Yes.
You know, even though they lost the weight, the body doesn't look, you know, like the after pictures that you would imagine that they would.
What are you expecting, Charles Atlas?
Well,
a supermodel?
For most of the people we're talking, I don't know, think bean bags left out in the rain.
You know, I will think,
yeah,
that.
Well, maybe that'll help you lose, right?
Well, if you have a story that you want to share with us, we would love to hear from you. TheDiabeticShow.com is our website.
Oh, we jumped right in. We forgot
it's
all about
Mark
that.
Mark at The Diabetic Show. I am Dobie at TheDiabeticShow.com.
And we have a Facebook thing going
on.
We
absolutely do.
So we get a lot of good suggestions. So
we certainly do.
We appreciate that. Let's take the break. I can't wait to talk to Rhonda.
Oh, Rhonda's fantastic. Rhonda Zalecki will be joining us, a talented singer. She's retired from her singing career. We'll let her talk about it. She's an interesting person, and I'm glad she's done. She did a lot of good stuff to share with us.
But now you see why I led with the strong story.
Okay, buddy.
The Diabetic Show. Thanks for hanging in there. We hope. We'll be right back. Diabetic Show, second portion. My name's Mark Philwick, probably a type 1 since the 80s.
I'm Toby Maxwell. Type 2, I stopped counting when. Joining us now, we have a special guest. I'm excited to get to this young lady. She is a big-time entertainer, and she is going on with her life in different directions to talk about it. But her name is Rhonda Zalecki, and a Milwaukee entertainment icon. Rhonda, thanks for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's so funny because we met up at a diabetic event a couple of years ago now, and you said, I'd like to come on your show, and I didn't want to say, well, I can't have a big name like this come on our little tiny show until we get it up and running. We got celebrities.
You might blow up.
We got, no, tell us about, we always like to hear people's story. Everybody's got a story about, now you're type 1, type 2, if you don't mind sharing, and most people don't.
Not at all. I'm actually type 1 diabetic. I was diagnosed in 1983, so
wow.
I've had it for about 33 years. I was diagnosed when I was 14.
I'm right there with you.
Oh,
sorry about that. I don't know if you caught that in your headsets. We had some ethereal music.
Yeah, we had aliens land. Sorry. I'm
okay, but it did give you credibility with what you were saying, Rhonda, so don't worry about that. Anyway.
Well, I just thought that was the normal sound I hear in my head.
Exactly
that's
right.
Good that that wasn't.
Don't you hate it when the voices start arguing with each other? It's very.
I do.
Throws
that's
me
a whole
off.
Other show, though.
True enough. No. Rhonda, diabetic type 1, so you just literally jumped right off in 83, so.
I did. It was, and as you are well aware, if you were diagnosed in the 80s, being diagnosed at that, I mean, not that there's ever a good time to be diagnosed with diabetes, but diabetes back then was very different than how it is now. There was no human insulin. There was actually insulin that was called beef and pork insulin because they didn't have insulin that was from humans. And it processed in the body very differently. Checking blood sugars was always a challenge. And also finding out that you're diabetic when you're a teenager is difficult. You're just starting high school and all your friends are out having shakes and, Big Macs and French fries. And, you've got to sit down and count all these things and basically flip your whole life around to try and live as normal a life as possible. So it was challenging for those years. But I can say that now, probably over the past, I'd say maybe 15 years, is when I've really managed to have a handle on it. And I did want to make mention very quickly, being in the entertainment industry, comes with a lot of side activities, I guess is what I'm going to say, that involves alcohol and some other activity that I was involved in for quite some time. I quit that in 2004, and I can tell you that managing my diabetes has been probably about 75% easier since I quit.
Now, okay, well, I have to ask, what did you quit?
Well, I drank very heavily. And what a lot of, what many diabetics don't understand about alcohol is there's a lot of diabetics who think that when you drink that the actual, not the alcohol itself, but the contents of the alcohol has, sugar. And so a lot of diabetics think that when they're drinking alcohol that they really have to compensate that sugar with extra insulin, when in fact the alcohol itself drops your blood sugar.
Exactly.
And I did not know that.
It's very,
quite the opposite.
It's very, very difficult when you've taken too much insulin to differentiate between being intoxicated and having a low glucose. It's hard to find out if that's even happening.
In my three decades, I have to interrupt here. In my three decades, my worst hypoglycemic episodes came on nights of drinking.
Right.
So I don't know what your flavor of the day was. For me, when I was drinking more, say, pre-diabetic, it was more of a mixed drink, like a vodka
right.
and or a gin and or a whiskey and. And it was interesting. Once diagnosed, I came with the exact same way. My thought processes were identical to yours, and quite a surprise. Now, when you gave up your drinking, what happened with your overalls and your A1Cs, your long-term sugars?
Well, when I quit, the first 3 months were a little bit of a challenge because my body was going through a lot of changes. When you're obviously ridding your body of poison, there's just a lot of changes that your body goes through. So it was very difficult to manage my blood sugars during that time frame. But since then, I'd say probably since about early 2005, my A1Cs have averaged anywhere between, I'd say maybe 5.8 and 6.4. My last A1C was actually 5.8.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's great.
So I check my blood sugar religiously, although I do have a Medtronic, that Medtronic pump that checks your blood sugar every 5 minutes.
Oh, CGM, sure.
Yes, and that actually works really, really well, one of the things that the CGM has taught me is how things that you think don't have sugar actually do have sugar.
What was your biggest surprise?
And it shows up on the pump, right after you eat something that's marked as sugar-free. Then you start to do the research of the ingredients, and you're like, oh, this itty-bitty little thing in here does have sugar. And they can say that it's sugar-free because that's what the FDA says they can say. So and I'm sure you guys understand this. It's really a 24-hour-a-day science project on yourself.
I have to ask you, what was your biggest surprise as far as hidden sugar?
I would drink in the mornings. I have a cup of coffee, and I have sugar-free cream and Splenda. I usually use one Splenda in my cup of coffee. And I never, when I drank that coffee, I never felt any different. It didn't feel like my blood sugars were high or low or anything. But I found that having one cup of coffee took my blood sugar from like 105 to about 260.
Jeez.
In a very fast amount of time. So I had to, even though the label said that there was less than one carb per
serving.
Per one tablespoon,
right.
I did not know that. I did not know that things that said sugar-free had sugar.
Is that stevia in that particular sweetener that you had?
The packet, the sugar packet, was stevia.
Yeah.
But even without the stevia, with just the cream, it raised my blood sugar pretty heavily.
Wow.
The stevia itself has, I know that has sugar, but that sugar is very little, and I know how to manage that with taking insulin. So that was interesting. And then it was also interesting finding out how fast certain carbs absorb in your body.
Mm.
And, finding out how to really catch sugars and how to catch insulin at certain times so that you're not dropping and you're not rising so fast. And the main thing I think that I realized is your emotions, how much your emotions affect your blood sugar. We have an IT guy where I work. This is actually kind of funny. We have an IT guy,
okay.
And we have so many computer issues that happen throughout the day. And you can pretty much be guaranteed that if I go downstairs to talk to the IT guy within like maybe 5 minutes, the alarm for my blood sugar machine goes off and tells me that my blood sugar's dropping. Every single time. It's so funny how that works. But your emotions burn calories. They burn sugar. So if you're overly using your emotions, it's going to affect your glucose.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah. And I think in years, especially as an entertainer, there's no stress in the entertainment business. We don't have any of that at all.
Oh, no, not at all. No.
Everything goes perfect.
Everybody shows up to the gigs on time. All the audience members love every song. Nobody requests Stairway to Heaven ever. So.
Free bird.
Right.
Rhonda Zalecki is our guest. We're going to take a quick break right now. We'll come back to do her last portion of the show. Rhonda can plug whatever she has. I know she's doing all interesting things. If you haven't heard her sing, I'm telling you, she is absolutely fantastic, and we're pleased to have her on. We are The Diabetic Show.
We'll be right back. And welcome back to The Diabetic Show. Mark Philwett, Type 1. I was dangling in the partisan, so you could just pick right up.
Dobie Maxwell, type 2. We are talking with our guest, and sometimes, we talk to our guests off air, and it's like, stop talking. We want to talk about it on the air. Rhonda Zalecki is our guest. She is, now, tell us, are you singing still? Now, I know that you had stopped for a while. Are you stopped? Have you retired? What are you doing now?
I'm actually almost completely stopped. I, this week, I got a call from the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department on Tuesday saying that they wanted me to call them back for an urgent matter. And I was like, what?
We have no idea what you're talking about.
They asked if I could sing the anthem for their deputy graduation yesterday. So,
did you do it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll always, national anthems are always something that are very important to me. So I generally say yes to, but the public and the private gigs have stopped. I'm actually attending Alverno College right now and obtaining my degree in music therapy. So I'm very, very excited about that and some great plans that are coming with that. And I'm also pushing my new website that I just built and went live this week. It's called Rhonda Bagos Speaks. And that website actually talks about childhood sexual abuse.
Huh.
I've done some public speaking around the world on the subject at conferences, schools, at churches, and it's really taken off. And there's some very, very good information and articles that people can read, especially good for survivors, but really good for anyone who's looking to find out more information about how to support a survivor, or if a survivor is looking for some critical help.
Now, you're a very, not only a great singer, but a talented writer. You've been blogging for a long time, and a lot of your blogs pop up on the internet. Is there some way, are you doing blogging on your website, or can people read that also?
Yes, they can actually, if they go to the website, rhondabagosspeaks.com, there is a blog link that's on every page. So they can click on that link and read the blogs that I have. And my blogs are generally centered around your own mental health and being able to really understand that you are responsible for your own mental health and the state of where your mind is at. Because as diabetics, as we know, depression is a big part of what can happen to a diabetic, especially later on in life. And if you're prone to depression because it runs in your family, or if you even just suffer from it based on whatever's happening in your life, it's important to really learn how to keep your mental health centered. So a lot of my blogs are around that subject matter, and they seem to be helping a lot of people, which is great, and they certainly help me when I write them.
And that's why I'm thrilled that you're on, because I'm familiar with your work, and it's excellent. I put my life out there for comedians. I've got a Facebook group that's got 3,300 comedians coming up, and they all think, oh, Rhonda, Adobe, they got it together, man. They're doing it and singing the national anthem. It's like, man, I am more nutty now as
that
I get older.
Sounds like some of the band members I've worked with.
But it's true. But I think the average person, a civilian, needs to know these kind of things, that not only are we struggling with the same things that they are, it's a lot of times magnified times 10, times 20. You're on
stage. Because of it.
You know, you're on stage for maybe an hour a night, and 23 hours is just an amped up hell.
Wow.
Right. And, you know, and that whole depression thing is, I mean, even just aside from the general reasons why someone would get depression, I mean, you know, when we have low blood sugars, and if those low blood sugars happen in front of someone, it's really, really embarrassing.
Yes.
And, you know, internally, even though you know it's not your fault, you always, and I think you guys can relate to this, you always take a step back and ask yourself, oh, my God, how did that happen? How could I not catch that? How did I not get on that? You know, not understanding that you're not going to be able to catch every low blood sugar all of the time. And, you know, those things just piled on top of each other can really cause your brain to get into a mode of just beating yourself up and not, you know, spending that time just being able to kind of work on whatever didn't work in that moment. So that's what my blogs are generally about, just not being so hard on yourself, but really pushing yourself to focus on your mental health so that you can make sure that all parts of you are strong.
Have to ask.
Yes.
Whenever I see those national anthem singers pops in my, you ever forget the words?
No. And that is a very good question. So I've gotten quite a few comments about this, but I'm going to try to explain this as best I can without offending anyone.
Please do.
So the men and women who are in the armed forces, you know, when they go out on that battlefield, any mistake that they make is life and death.
Mm-hmm.
So So any decision that they make that's going through their head at any given moment could mean their life or someone else's life.
Okay.
When I sing the national anthem, my thought always is, if I can't take the time to make sure that I'm singing all of these words right, I mean, if I can't just do that compared to what these guys are doing, then why am I doing this? And who am I doing it for? And, you know, what am I performing it for? So you can't get the words to the national anthem wrong.
People have.
Oh, that's so great to hear you say that, though.
Now, Tom Green was a good friend of mine, and he passed away.
Oh, I know Tom.
Tom was great. He passed away from cancer and just a wonderful human being. And between the two of you, you guys were like the icons when you go to see Nat. I've seen you perform it live, and it looks so difficult out there. Is it a hard song? I talk to singers and say, you know, I wish we could have another song. Not that we're not disrespectful, but it's just a hard song to sing.
If you started in the wrong key, it's definitely going to be a hard song to sing.
Yeah.
Especially when you get to the higher parts. It's the reason why I think sometimes people think it's difficult to sing is because they try to turn it into something that it's not. And the reality is that the national anthem is beautiful in its simplicity. Mm-hmm. And if you sing it in a simple manner, but it comes from your heart. I mean, when I see vets cry when I'm singing it, and I haven't done anything to inflectuate, no, it's, I know I've done what I'm supposed to do. And so they don't really care if you get all the notes right. They just want to make sure that it's coming from the right place.
Well, it's interesting.
And I think.
Well,
go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry. No, please. Finish your
and
thought.
I think that's where people sometimes miss it, is that they want every note to be right, but they don't want their hearts to be in the right place.
Part that kills me as an audience member, I understand that you want to put your mark on it, but there are some singers that almost kidnapped the song.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, boom shakalaka is not original words in the national anthem.
No, they are not.
Yeah,
you
but
are correct.
And you see people that do.
I have to look that up.
Did you see the one? There was a lady, or maybe a younger high school girl, whatever, singing the national anthem at a sporting event, and she's taking a knee while she's singing it. You know, the whole
thing. Yeah.
I just thought that was just, I never would have thought of that. It made me laugh. I don't want to get in that whole bag of thing. People.
You just did.
I do.
You just did.
I just saw that. It made me laugh.
You
when
weren't
I saw. There. Yeah, exactly. Well, did you know this? You guys might not know this, and I'm sure you probably do, but some listeners don't. There are several verses to the national anthem, not just the one that we hear over
there
and over.
There are.
Good point.
Yes, there are. The whole story behind the national anthem is actually really interesting. If you look it up and look at the history of it, it's quite amazing when you read the story about why it was written, where it came from, where the words came from, all that stuff. It's a pretty big deal, and to the vets it means a lot.
It means
a lot. Yes.
I was at a minor league baseball game. This is years ago, and they sang one of the other verses. It was close to the 4th of July, if it wasn't on the 4th of July. And there were people, vets included, that were getting angry because they didn't know there were other verses. I didn't know what to think. It's the same song with different words. And then I did some research on it. It's like, wow, that was a tribute to learn all the new words. I mean, people kind of know the ones now, but that was
kind of.
Yeah. Wow.
But I remember when I was in high school, we had social studies teacher had asked us to write the words to the national anthem, and I was pretty impressed. I was 17 at the time. I was the only one who knew all the words.
Really?
So, very good.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people who don't know the words.
Do you happen to know who Albert Brooks is?
The Albert
that
Brooks.
Sounds so familiar.
He's a comedian. He's had some movies.
Yes, he was in the movie with Dory, the fish, right?
He
played Nemo. Yes.
He's got a lot of movies. Lost in America. He's got a ton of them. He's a very, his real name is Albert Einstein, and his brother maybe was Super Dave Osborne.
Yeah.
They're brothers. It's Dave Einstein and Albert Einstein. My point is, he has got a bit which you can find on YouTube. It's called The New National Anthem.
Really?
And they're taking auditions for a new national anthem. They're trying to jazz it up and everything. It's one of the funniest bits I've ever seen in my life. If you're listening, check it out. It's like a 3-minute bit. It'll make you laugh out loud.
Albert Brooks.
The new national anthem.
I love Albert Brooks. He's funny.
Too funny. Now, do you have anything coming up that you want to plug? This is what we are recording it at a time. We'll be airing it in March, but it'll be on our website.
Okay. I don't necessarily have anything coming up. I guess what I would just like people to do is just to continue to visit my website, RhondaBagosSpeaks.com, especially with all the stuff that's going on with the Me Too movement and with so many people coming out with their stories of survival as far as sexual assault is concerned.
Yeah.
I think it's important for people to understand that there are places to go and safe places to go for people to be able to find some peace in their lives that, you know, that they deserve to have. That particular website also has a page that will list any of the public speaking events that I have. And I will be actively working on doing some more public speaking about childhood sexual abuse and sexual abuse just in general, probably coming up in the next couple of months or so. But I would just suggest to keep looking at that website and looking at the blogs and finding some inspiration in them. And hopefully it'll help you through some tough times. Especially, you know, my diabetic friends.
Well, that's why we're here, to try to just reach out to have a support group. A lot of times you hear, you know, sexual abuse. Those are hard words. Diabetes, that's a hard word when you're diagnosed and you're by yourself sitting in the doctor's office. Well, wait a minute, I thought I had a cold. I read something interesting about you. You never had your tonsils out.
I did not.
I did not either. You know what? It's one of those things where I got to be the point where it's like 17, 18. It's like it's too late now. And about every 3 or 4 years, they swell up to about the size of ravioli, and I can't swallow. And I get these infected rot jungle sickness. And they said, too late.
Well, I used to get tonsillitis a lot as a kid. Mm-hmm. And that's actually one of the reasons why I left music, because whatever types of viruses that my tonsils were causing had kind of wreaked some havoc in that area, just in terms of me being able to get voice out in the way that I was used to getting it out. But, you know, one of the wonderful things about growth and one of the great things about quitting drinking and quitting all those things that were actually mind-altering at that time was that when I found out that I was going to be leaving singing, I never felt like I was losing anything. I always felt like, okay, well, you know, that was a great career. Now, what do I do now? Like, what am I supposed to be doing to fill up that time?
Interesting, and you would put it like that, though.
Yeah. And
life
because I
is
was focused,
chapters.
I really wasn't scared, and I wasn't sad. And I felt like, you know, and I had a wonderful singing career. I mean, the experiences that I had in singing were so fantastic. Just from the people who I've met, the national shows I've done, they were fantastic. But it was time for me to do something new, and my life had changed, and it was time for my life to change, and I was really, really receptive to that, and that's why my mind was so open to going back to school, and I actually really love school a lot.
Wow, you're the one. No, it's good. Kudos to you for wanting to learn. So many people, they get a certain thing in their head, like the, you know, old days. You grew up in Milwaukee just like I did. Work at the factory, Alice Chalmers, 43 years, and you get your little gold watch. and you can sit on the couch as your butt gets bigger and your brain gets smaller watching All-Star Wrestling, and your life is over.
I loved All-Star Wrestling.
I did too, but there's got to have something going on.
Greg Gagne was my best.
Oh, my God. Ernie Ladd always had that. You knew he had something with his thumb. He had a piece of metal in his thumb because when that, you saw it. He put the thumb right in the guy's throat.
You know, it's funny. I was a wrestling ring announcer for a long time. I got to know a lot of these guys. And some of them are diabetic too. And you talk about this, the road lifestyle.
Yes.
I don't know how much road work that you actually did. It's not the gig that they're paying you for. It's the travel and the bad food. I don't know how anybody can have a good diet on the road.
Oh, I know. Yes, it's pretty bad. It's terrible.
And like you say, things have changed over the 30, 35 years that you never thought of. And it's all carbs today.
It is. Actually, I mean, it's not cool, but it is cool. My husband has a gluten allergy. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's great.
True enough.
We don't have any carbs in the house. And it's wonderful because I, you know, and we both eat very healthy. Because of our diseases.
we're working on whole wheat ding dongs and Oreos. So as soon as we get those, we'll let you know.
I love it.
Rhonda Zalecki is our guest. Rhonda, thanks so much for being with us. The time flew by, as I knew it would. Thank you for volunteering to be on the show. And we want to keep in touch with you, too. We hope to have some events and stuff. We can invite you down, and you can be part of the crew.
I would love to. Thank you.
Excellent.
All right. Good deal. I know she'd be a great guest. She's just a very interesting lady.
But just to think. The national anthem, the hardest 90 to 120 seconds you ever do with the ranges and the.
Mm-hmm. God Bless America would be better. I don't know. Old Canada.
Always prettier.